Relax, everybody. I'm here.
Batman!
What's up, babe?
Babe!
What?
Oh, sorry. Batman, this is Emmett. Emmett, this is my boyfriend, Batman.
I'm Batman.
We welcome you to Denton Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Now, here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello and welcome to the Wishbone Podcast, brought to you by the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, not a whole lot going on in the world of Auburn sports this week, aside from sort of basketball season winding down and questions about our coach and the SEC tournament and everything. Depending on when we get this episode up, hopefully that'll be ahead of us. So tonight we have a very special episode in which we have Auburn's beat reporter Brandon Marcello joining us. He's going to talk to us for a little while coming up in a little bit about all sorts of things Auburn and others otherwise related and not related. But before that, I guess we need to touch very quickly on the 10-second rule, which sounds like what happens when Nick Saban drops his sandwich on the floor.
And the good news is that the 10-second rule failed, so we don't have to worry about Nick Saban eating his old sandwich.
You know, and I was saying earlier this week, or late last week, that it was just about worth it to go through all this just to see him lose and be humiliated publicly.
He really didn't help himself and help his cause. And it's one of those things where I see this all the time, like in real legislation with real laws and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to go out there and propose something like this, you better have a very strong case of facts and research and evidence backing it up. It can't just be because you want it to be that way. And I think this is a case where they propose this rule and they laid out this, well, it causes players to get hurt more, but they didn't have the data to prove that. If they'd had a lot of empirical evidence, some serious studies that said hurry up offenses get players hurt, this rule would have passed, regardless of what Gus or Rich Rodriguez or Mike Leach or anybody else said. But they didn't have it. So then it just became a debate, and they quickly got crushed on the debate side of it.
And the Alabama fans have pretty much been in damage control and denial mode, which they pretty much live in 24/7, 365, ever since then, saying, well, it was really Bulema.
You love butchering his name.
Well, look, you can't spell coaches' names, and I can't pronounce them. So between the two of us, we're okay. They're all like, oh, it was really him. See, it wasn't really. You know, Saban just got pulled into this against his will. Like, you know, Brett, you know, just pulled up in Saban's yard and threw a bag over his head and stuck him in the back of a van and drove him out to that meeting and held a gun to his head and forced him to say those things. But, of course, Saban chewed through the bag and got loose. And freed himself and fled back to Tuscaloosa just ahead of the bad guys. So that's what really happened, of course, in their mind. So, but you know, the funny thing too about it is that Football AU on Twitter just tweeted, "We're only going to get faster."
I saw that.
That's awesome. That's very welcome as far as I'm concerned. All right. Well, with no further ado, let's go ahead and get Brandon on here and see what he has to say. I've got some questions for him about, sort of the work of being a beat reporter. And we also got some Auburn football inside questions and things like that. And also, I got a few superhero-related questions for him. So let's go ahead and bring in Brandon now. Okay, and now we are joined by only our second special guest that we've ever had on the show. Usually, John and I are sort of selfish and keep this all to ourselves, but we are very fortunate tonight to be joined by Auburn beat reporter Brandon Marcello of AL.com. Welcome aboard, Brandon. So glad to have you on.
thanks for having me, Van. I appreciate it, man.
Well, I always have a great time with your stuff in three ways. I enjoy your columns, certainly, on AL.com. That, with me being up here in Illinois, it's one of the key ways that I keep track of what's going on back in the loveliest village. And I enjoy your videos with your sidekick, Joel A. Erickson. And I also enjoy interacting some on Twitter with you because you're very friendly and approachable to the masses like me. And so we all very much appreciate we appreciate that you're willing to kind of chat with us, interact with us, and even come on the show. So why don't you start out by telling us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be an Auburn beat reporter? Because I'm very curious how it all kind of came together for you.
Well, previously I was covering Mississippi State for the Clarion Ledger, a statewide paper in Mississippi. I did that for, I think, three football seasons. This job came open, and I had knew some people over here, at least in the company, the Birmingham News, and the conglomerate, so to speak, the AL.com conglomerate. And, I was very interested in the position. Obviously, Auburn is one of the top, football schools in the country, and I kind of jumped at the opportunity, and here I am, landed here. I've been kind of in the SEC my entire life, so to speak. I grew up in the South. I grew up in Mississippi, actually, on the Gulf Coast, and then moved to Arkansas, I guess when I was about to go through junior high and everything, and went to college in Arkansas, and covered Arkansas for a little bit in college. I wouldn't say full-time, obviously, but I kind of worked my way up, did some government reporting, did some news reporting, and finally found my way back into sports, covered some high school stuff, and then worked my way up through that. And my first big break was that job at covering Mississippi State, and here I am a few years later. It's been a heck of a quick ride, but been very enjoyable, and obviously nothing better than your first year on the job covering Auburn to cover a national championship game.
Yeah, it worked out kind of well for everybody. I knew that you had come over from Mississippi State as your previous job. Kind of how would you compare the two? I mean, they're both SEC West programs, and I'm sure that Mississippi State has lots of passionate fans, and I know that it's sort of a rural school. I mean, it's probably the most similar in some ways to Auburn of any of the 14 or whatever in some ways, I guess. How do you see kind of that comparison coming from one to the other?
Yeah, it's, I guess there is some sort of comparison there, them being rural schools, so to speak, both land-grant institutions.
Mm-hmm.
But, Mississippi State's a lot different in a lot of ways. One, monetarily, just from the budget standpoint, what they're able to do with their athletics program. And two, it's a much smaller town. It's a little bit further away from everything. In a way, obviously you got Auburn and Opelika, which is just next door.
Mm-hmm.
And Starkville, you got Starkville, and you've got Columbus, which is about 20 miles away, but they're much smaller towns. It's very much a college town in the sense that that's the only thing that's going on there. And if you live there, you're probably in your 40s or above, and everybody else is in their 20s or below. But kind of an interesting mix. Starkville gets kind of a bad rap sometimes, but I enjoyed my time there 3 years, and I'm not just saying that just to say it, because the people that kind of stayed there, they saw some opportunities to open up some different types of businesses as far as restaurants. There's some great, great restaurants there, just incredible hometown restaurants, some really good stuff, some great chefs there. And then they got like, this little bar district, they call it the Cotton District, right near campus, where it's kind of an eclectic crowd of youngsters, and then also when it's game week, everybody's going down there to go hang out and chill out, and type of place where you can go sit out on a front porch at a restaurant or a bar and sit out there and watch the sunset in the summer and not have to worry about getting a seat or anything like that. It's really a great town. But athletics program, they obviously have not had much success. I think that the two programs obviously they've had the most success is baseball, which they actually just went to the national championship game themselves this past year at the College World Series. And then in basketball and what they did under Rick Stansbury, winning all those SEC West titles and getting to the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So those are kind of what they kind of lean on. Football's starting to come around a little bit, but they haven't been really at that big-time level. And in a way, kind of some inside baseball stuff, so to speak, with mm-hmm. that actually relates to baseball. But, you know, they're a little bit more, maybe I would say, more open with the media at times.
Mm.
They're wanting to try and sell their program. Whereas when you come to a place like Auburn, you know, it's Auburn. It's been the top five program, always has been, always will be when it comes to football. And the SEC, football's king, and that's kind of what filters down through everything. So you go from coming to Mississippi State team where you have to do a lot of hard work developing sources and stuff like that and covering teams that might not be winning a lot and trying to find interesting stories to tell while doing that. And then you come to a place like Auburn where, you know, I could write about, you know, anything football related and people are going to be interested because it's, like I said, the top five program. Anything you write about football, people are going to be interested in. There's always an interesting story everywhere you go.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my first question for you is, what's the one, if there's one question you have going into spring practice, one question you think Auburn needs to answer to have a successful spring practice, what is it?
Oh, man, let's see. I think, obviously, there's a lot of key spots they got to fill, but I think the biggest question that is obvious for a lot of reasons, but I think it's going to prove itself out when the season starts, is who's going to be the running back. I think they're going to go with a committee approach, which they started doing last year until Trey Mason was just head and shoulders, obviously better than everybody at a consistent level. I just wonder if there is a guy that's either on campus this spring or a guy like Rock Thomas coming in or even Cameron Petway, that when they come in, they are going to be able to distance themselves and prove that they're the number one back. I think that obviously with this offense, you can do a lot of things. They want to run. They want to run the ball. They also want to throw it a little bit more than they did this past season. But I think if Auburn's going to be successful again, they have got to have a tailback that is dominating defenses at times. Could be a grinder, but can also be a speedster. They need a guy to rush for about 1,200 yards to get back to that, you know, the SEC championship to maybe national championship level. And this spring, I think, is huge for that reason. And then also, you know, a guy like Cameron Artis Payne, who last spring, you know, blew the doors off everything. I mean, he was the, you know, A-Day MVP. We thought he was going to be the next tailback, and then sure enough, Trey Mason stepped up. You know, and Cameron Artis Payne, that's obviously his year. If he wants to be the starter, this is the year to do it. I think this spring, as far as the running back position goes, when it comes down to one person, a make or break time, I think this is make or break it for Cameron Artis Payne. Because as I said, if he does not distance himself or show some explosiveness there, when these new guys get on campus, especially Rock Thomas, things could get, you know, pretty interesting when they get into 2 days in fall camp.
Well, you know, that was kind of the question that came to my mind as soon as John asked that is, do you think Cameron Artis Payne can be that guy? I mean, like you say, we kind of thought that last year, and it didn't exactly work out. And I've been going back and watching the season over. I'm kind of a few games in now. And what really is striking me that I had forgotten is how long it took Trey Mason to really emerge as sort of the man. So, I mean, can Artis Payne do that?
I think he can. I've seen some glimpses. Here's the thing. I when you watch the tape, and this was even throughout the season when it was happening live, he was hesitating at times when running the ball. I don't think he was hitting the hole. Mm-hmm. I think he's kind of questioning himself for a split second at times. If he can kind of get rid of that, I know it's a lot to say that, I think he's very much a starting tailback in the SEC, but he's got to do that. He's got to be able to make those quick decisions and get through the hole. I mean, Trey Mason, the guy was stellar, and he is stellar, but what really helped him was he just did not hesitate. He found a hole, and no matter how small it was, he was going to get through it somehow. and that's what made him so special and so much fun to watch. And that's why, for example, I don't know if you got into that game yet, the Tennessee game. Obviously, it was a blowout. But they pull Trey Mason, obviously, and they bring Cap in. And you could just tell they're running the same plays, but Cap is about half a step slower because he's hesitating with some of the moves and his cuts. I guess almost like the perfect game if you want to look at the difference there between the two. He's got to fix that, but if he does, he's got the talent. I saw it last spring. I heard about it in fall camp. He's the type of guy that is built to be a starting running back in the SEC, and he's just got to prove it.
John?
What do you think about do you think the passing game is going to improve? It was kind of hit or miss at times last year, and it seems like they were, you know, a little bit after a while being conservative with Marshall because the running game is working so well. Do you think they're going to make a concerted effort to throw the ball a lot more in the spring to get he and the receivers more comfortable, or do you think you know, there's a much higher ceiling than they've shown with the passing game?
Yeah, I think we saw those first steps in the BCS title game. Well, they threw the ball a little bit more. They did some different things in the passing game with Nick Marshall. You know, a lot like Cameron R. Spain running the ball and hesitating, that's kind of what Nick is still working through. I mean, you look at that first deep pass down the field in the BCS game. He underthrew that a little bit. It's almost as if he's got time and he sees someone wide open, it actually hurts him a little bit. But if he has someone who's in, like, tight coverage, he manages a way to get it in there.
That's right.
I think that's all mental. He's got the tools, man. I think that he is very underrated. Not only as a quarterback, but, you know, obviously shooting to his feet. But overall, I think he's a very good passer when he can be and wants to be. It's just a matter of getting over some of those issues when he sees a guy wide open and he's overthrowing him. But, man, if you look back at that first game, Washington State, I actually did this before the SEC championship game. I went back and watched his very first series against Washington State, and, I mean, it just looked bad. I mean, let's face it, he just looked bad. He was overthrowing CJ over the middle of the field, overthrowing receivers near the sideline. And you could tell, they show in Gus Malzahn, he's kind of got his hand on his head like, okay, well, that's not going to work. I got to figure something else out here. That's not working.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the thing with Gus. He identifies the strengths of his team. Now, they're going to try and get Nick better. They want to throw the ball more because they're going to have more tools and obviously threats with Nikhil Williams on campus right now.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to do that. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised this spring if you see them throwing the ball all over the place and looking like world beaters. They'll look like world beaters, but it'll be designed that way, these practices and A-day scrimmage, just to build up Nick Marshall's confidence more or less, and also to be able to dissect some film and kind of get him in a rhythm and understand what this offense could be, let's say, if they have to throw the ball 30 times in the game and do so at tempo. I think that's probably what you're going to see this spring.
I've got one more sort of football-related question. I got some other things I want us to talk about, too. But I saw that one of the questions we got from our listeners on Twitter today, and I'll go ahead and pass it on to you, and I thought it was an interesting overall question, is what can we expect from Ellis Johnson and the defense? Because I really thought that they, especially early in the year, they sort of carried the team when the offense was still kind of finding its legs, literally. And, you know, how much better can they be?
You know, it's a very good question, and they're going to be as good as that defensive line is. That's really going to be the key. I mean, we saw it. They're rotating guys in, 10 or 11 guys in the game. I mean, and it wore people down. The problem is the breakdowns on defense at times. I mean, goodness, I mean, Auburn's offense, as good as it was, the defense didn't really help them out in some situations, and then they would redeem themselves with a red zone stop or a turnover. And the strangest defense I've really ever seen, and Ellis Johnson will tell you the same. I mean, he couldn't figure it out. He just couldn't. If you look at the stats, I mean, he said that several times, like, guys, I can't figure it out. I'm telling these guys on the SEC championship game, if we allow this many yards and keep doing this, we're not winning the championship. And then sure enough, you know, they allow 42 points and all these yards, and you know, then Trey Mason breaks every record imaginable and they score 59 points. I don't think Ellis Johnson quite, you know, has ever experienced that. Not a lot of people have as a defensive coordinator. But here's the thing, let's face it, they didn't have a ton of five-star like talent on that defense last season, and they were thin at times. I mean, it's really incredible what they're able to do with the safeties, considering the injuries they had there, especially after Josh Holsey went down before the Texas A&M game, and they're having to move Ryan White and Ryan Smith around, and man, they did a pretty good job, I thought. But, you know, the defensive line, it's all going to start there, obviously. They have got to find someone to be that top pass rusher. Dee Ford was phenomenal. Even when he wasn't getting quarterback hurries, when he had 17 last year, he was just a threat. You could tell that, you know, he's the type of guy that quarterbacks didn't know where he was at all times. And while Auburn does have a lot of talent defensive front, they don't quite have that guy that demands that immediate individual attention. And they've got to develop that in the first few games this season. Then the last thing, I know I'm talking about every position, but the last thing, though, they've got to have better linebacker play. Linebacker play was the weakness last year. It hurt them with run fits. That's why you saw a lot of running backs break off some big runs and help pick up those short yardage and get those first downs. That was an issue, just run fits and playing assignment football. They've got to get better there. I think the defense is going to be better, maybe not necessarily in the red zone, kind of like they were this last year. They're really good. I think overall the numbers will go down, which will help them, obviously, and help them get off the field. I think that it's really going to help them because I could see this offense being a little bit more dangerous from the standpoint of that they will take less time off the clock because, as I said, I think they're probably going to throw the ball a little bit more, which means less time on the field for the offense and more time on the field for the defense potentially. But they're kind of counting on the defense to be a little bit better and get offenses off the field faster than they did this past season as well.
I guess my question is more kind of a bigger question as being a beat reporter is seeing the team as a whole from when you walked in the door, there was a huge difference over the time that you came to, you know, where we are today, and not the on the field stuff and the coaching in between the lines, but what did you see off the field that changed about this team and how they were treated by the coaches and the administration or whatever the school, but and then how they kind of treated themselves or whatever. What happened there that made a difference that people don't see?
You know, the coaches have talked about it plenty, but it's true. I mean, they literally just came in and said, listen, guys, especially Gus, like, I know you guys, I know what you went through this last year. It's kind of incredible you guys went through that, going 3-9. I know what you're capable of, and I'm sorry you went through that, but listen, we're going to start all over. I'm going to start everything over here. I'm going to give you a fresh start. You guys have to reprove yourselves, but I know you're capable. And that's what happened. I think the guys really just bought into that. You had a really good group of juniors and seniors that felt that this was, these next 2 years are really a time, their last time, obviously, to make a run. And I think that the offensive players really just knew that, especially Trey Mason, they knew what this offense would be capable of in Gus's hands because they've seen it before. And everywhere Malzahn goes, he's successful. I mean, if not the reason, besides Cam Newton, a huge reason why they won a national title 3 years ago. And he's proven it again. I think Gus has definitely proven to everybody he's one of the top five, top three coaches in the country right now. And I know I might be stepping on a limb there, with him only being a head coach for two seasons already, but I think that's the case. But these players just believed in it. They had some good leadership. They kind of got rid of the off-the-field riffraff. They moved past that. And then once they started winning some games, they kept their concentration. And I think really, as much as we look at that A&M game as a turning point, I really think the turning point happened a little bit earlier. I think it's that Ole Miss game. When they were able to win that game, they built a big lead. They held on, and Carl Lawson had the game-ending hit and sack on Bo Wallace. I think that made them finally believe, hey, one, we're going to get to a bowl game, but two, we could keep winning. We're a little bit better than we were against LSU, and they kind of built everything from there. And whether it's the magic touch, I don't know, but everywhere Gus goes, and I brought this up to him, and he didn't really answer it because he's kind of a tight-lipped guy, but everywhere he goes, it seems like there's a point in the season, right about the midway point, where his teams just get better offensively. They're just putting up better numbers. You see it on paper. At Arkansas State, they struggled a little bit early, kind of like they did here at Auburn, and then they started scoring, you know, almost at will there, and then they obviously won another Sun Belt title. Arkansas, when he was the offensive coordinator there all those years ago, same thing happened. Tulsa, his first season, same thing happened. They just get better as the season goes. That's good coaching, but also it's the players buying in. And then he finds a way to kind of, during the bye weeks, to strengthen the offense and to identify some strengths and find some things that they can do a really good job at. And that's kind of what happened. It was a good mixture of things. And then Ole Miss game happened, and then A&M, the incredible ending there. I think that more or less the A&M game kind of made them all think, okay, well, we can win the rest of these games. If we can go on the road and beat Johnny Football, we can beat anybody with the schedule coming up.
Yeah, you know, that is interesting that usually that kind of procedure takes 2 years. I mean, it was, you know, you look at all these various coaches that have won the national championship in their second year, including Gus with Chizik, you know, the first time. And it was almost like 2013 was two seasons squeezed into one. There was the figuring out what we're doing season, and then there was the, you know, starting to become dominant at what we do. And they each took half a season, sort of. It was kind of like everything was on fast forward last year. Is that how it kind of seemed to you, or what?
Yeah, I mean, when I look back, and I haven't even fully grasped, like, you know, kind of what all happened, but it was a marathon season where, you know, honestly, I don't think anybody in their right mind in the preseason were going, you know what, this team's going to win an SEC title. but when they started winning, you know, that Ole Miss game, I saw signs there. You know, I thought that the defense needed to step up and not, you know, their weakness was they get a big lead, and defense would kind of, I want to say, give up. They weren't giving up, but these offenses would get in hurry-up mode, and they're able to attack some things with slants and, you know, attacking the linebackers as well. But you're exactly right. It did seem like two seasons in one. I mean, when, like I said earlier, when I pulled up that Washington State film, that first drive, the week of the SEC championship game, it felt like I was watching a spring game from Gus's first season here back in 2009 or something.
Yeah.
It didn't look familiar at all to me.
Mm-hmm. John, you have any other football questions before we give Brandon a few pop culture questions?
Nope, go for it.
All right, well, Brandon, I was saying that I enjoy you and Joel's little videos. It's always fun to see where on campus y'all are going to pop up next, and if there will be like a forklift beeping behind you or a storm blowing through or, you know, a band practicing or something. That's always very entertaining. You guys manage to find these creative spots. Now, I've got to ask you, would you say that the two of you are the Batman and Robin of beat reporters? And if so, which one's Batman, which one's Robin?
Well, you know what? I'm going to have to make Joel listen to this now just because we're talking superheroes. I would say that I'm Batman, but he's Superman.
Oh!
Yes. I mean, he is... Joel's a huge Superman nerd, by the way.
Okay.
Huge. Yes, he's seen Man of Steel quite a few times. Yes, no Batman and Robin. We're Batman and Superman.
Is world's finest is what the two of you are. How about that?
You are the world's finest. There you go. But here's the thing. He's still young Superman, and I feel like I'm Batman and Dark Knight Strikes Back. I feel like I'm kind of worn out. I'm kind of a little chubby. I'm showing wear and tear. But you know what? I'll find a way to get my point across, I guess. But
there you go.
Yeah, Batman and Superman. Let's go with that.
All right, would you say that you're more a DC guy or a Marvel guy?
I'm more DC, and I'll be honest with you.
Okay.
Movie-wise, I'm kind of getting tired of the Marvel stuff. It's wearing on me. It's way too... I don't like all these dark movies. Like, it seems like everybody wants to label the DC movies and the DC universe dark, but, you know, I think Marvel's time of kind of dominating everything with this... Oh, tongue in cheek, and this is funny, and look at me, you know, whatever. I think that's kind of worn me down a little bit, and I think at least movie wise, as I say, you see Marvel going more and more toward this cosmic stuff,
mm-hmm.
You know, the magic, It's obviously, you know, could work, very well could work, but I'm still one of those guys that likes to be grounded a little bit with their heroes and their storytelling, the movies, and I think with what DC is hopefully setting up, though they could easily mess up too, and I'm kind of worried about it, but I'm more of a DC guy, always kind of has been. Even when I was a kid, Batman was my guy. You know, reading comic books, and I didn't get introduced to some of the Frank Miller stuff and other things like that until I got to be a teenager. But I've always been kind of more of a DC guy than Marvel. I even with Marvel, I think I was more of a X-Men. I'd read X-Men quite a bit, but other than that, wasn't really much of a Spider-Man guy. Wasn't really anything. And it really made the Marvel character I connected to the most was Daredevil, who was pretty much a poor man's Batman. So.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah.
So, what do the beat writers do for fun when you're on the road? I mean, do y'all play video games? Do you go watch movies together? Or are you, like, working every minute, or what happens?
We work a lot. Usually, it's kind of, it's funny. We'll, like, it'll be, like, right now, maybe, like, real late at night, and one of us will text you and go, are you done working yet? It's like, no, I gave you 30 minutes. And then it's just kind of a unwind time where we kind of just go find somewhere to eat and then maybe have a beer or two and then call it a night. It's kind of boring. It's very boring, actually. now I'm thinking of it, it's very, very boring. We haven't had any crazy nights or anything like that, anything. It's just kind of, well, done working and let's go have some food and maybe have a beer, and then you drink half the beer and go, you know what, I'm really tired, I'm just going to walk back to the hotel.
Are you more of a movies, TV guy, comics? What's your favorite kind of entertainment, these days? Where do you, cable TV in the hotel room?
These last 5 years or so I've become more of a TV guy just because there's such good writing and with some of these shows. I mean, True Detective just ended, but I thought it was incredible with Matthew McConaughey, Woody Harrelson. The writing was incredible on that. I was a big Breaking Bad guy, big The Wire guy. In fact, I've been meaning to go back and watch that. I go back to this, and movies just seem to be like everything's a superhero movie.
Yeah.
And then when Oscar season comes around, the Oscar movies are all dumped on us within 2 months, and those are really the only other movies anybody talks about. Really, you can really find out there. It's kind of interesting how movies have changed quite a bit in the last 10 years from that standpoint, and I think it's about to get even more saturated when you look at the comic book stuff and movies. I mean, you got, what is it, Fox talking about doing an X-Force movie and X-Men, and then Daredevil, and they're wanting an X-Men movie maybe every year or two, and then Sony's wanting some type of Spider-Man movie every year, or Venom, or Sinister Six spinoff, or whatever. It's kind of overload for me. I don't know. I get the kind of feeling that's going to bottom out, and I'm kind of missing, honestly, I'll watch a box, big box office movie, but it'd be nice if a box office movie wasn't, just some superhero movie. Whatever happened to aliens attacking the Earth or something?
Yeah, it is. That has kind of faded out a little bit, isn't it? That's true. Okay, I don't want to keep you too long, but I've got one more sort of Auburn-related question I was wanting to get in, if I could. I'm curious about this, because you're talking about how you came originally, you're from Mississippi, you went to Arkansas, you worked in Mississippi again. So coming to Auburn, and we talked a little bit already about just kind of what the atmosphere and the environment's like between there versus Auburn, but I'm curious what your reaction was to stepping right into the middle of the Iron Bowl rivalry, the Auburn-Alabama, I'm just curious what you certainly knew about Alabama fans before, but it's a different world being inside the bubble with the Alabama fans. So what has that been like for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely intense. I don't think anybody can properly prepare you for what the Iron Bowl rivalry is like. I mean, it's obviously year-long, and there's always someone or, you know, for example, like on Twitter, like tweeting at me, whether it's an Alabama fan, you know, accusing me of being an Auburn homer, or an Auburn fan tweeting me, accusing me of being an Alabama homer. It's you know, I covered the Egg Bowl rivalry in Mississippi, which is a big deal there, but, I mean, this is, you know, 3,000 times bigger than that and more intense. I mean, it's every day. People are hanging on every word. They're always obviously comparing each other, even when they say they're not comparing each other. They're like, oh, I don't care what they're doing. What are they doing? What are they doing over there? So it's a lot of fun from that standpoint. Hey, that's why I've got a job. it's very intense. And here's the thing. This is my first year in it. I try to kind of keep my head above water and work and all that. But that Iron Bowl, obviously, with the way it ended, I was joking with some friends who were saying, hey, this is before the game even started. Hey, what if this game like somehow had a crazy ending like that Georgia game? and someone said, I'm pretty sure the entire state of Alabama will like lift off into space or just fall into the earth.
Some would say it lifted off into space years ago, but yeah, it's okay.
and you know, when it happened, that's all I could think of. I was just going, wow, this is this is the biggest moment I'm sure ever in Iron Bowl history, but you know, 100 years from now, people are going to be talking about it, and it might still be the biggest, craziest thing to ever happen in the Iron Bowl history. And I think it's one of those things where, I can't speak for fans or either side, but I don't think anybody quite realized the immediate aftermath, like how maybe not necessarily shifted the dynamic, but it changed the dynamic. I mean, if it couldn't get any more intense, man. It's going to be really intense this year, and I think that game kind of proved to everybody, which we kind of already knew with, you know, the last four winners that go in the championship game, but that this rivalry is a top rivalry, obviously, in the country, but I don't think you could say of any sport where, especially in a college football where there's 100-plus teams, where you always pretty much have the top two or top five programs in the same state. It's incredible. And if I'm a fan, I'm sitting there thinking, you know what, this is pretty darn cool. I better enjoy it because, you know, it could change any time, even for a brief period. I think what we're experiencing right now, I think what we're going to experience these next few years with this rivalry is going to be something that they write all kinds of books on in the future.
Including John and me, probably.
Absolutely, and I will buy it. I read your guys' book this summer on the beach, in fact.
Oh, that's so – I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome. John, we're going to let him go in just a second. You got any last thoughts for Brandon before we let him run?
No, I just thank you for all your work this season, and I appreciate the fact that you had to suffer through the entire Auburn basketball season with the rest of us. I've watched a lot of Auburn basketball, and this was not the funnest season to watch. So,
yeah, you know what? The last teams I've covered, I've really have not covered an NCAA tournament team, and Mississippi State or here. I got Mississippi State right when things were falling apart there.
Oh.
And then I got here, and obviously I knew what position it was in. But, we'll see. The SEC tournament's coming up.
Yeah, we'll see.
My wife always messes with me because I immediately pull out the SEC tournament bracket and look at Auburn's path. She's like, what are you doing? Look at Auburn's path to the title game.
Oh, yeah. And once every 15 years.
I'll say this. I don't know when this is airing, so I might be dating this and ruining the magic behind the mic. But I think they could win the first two games there. I like the matchups. I think they obviously could beat Carolina for a third time, and Arkansas is just a completely different team in a neutral site or home game. We saw that at Alabama this past week. The type of defense they play and the up tempo stuff. you know, it just doesn't translate on the road when you don't have a crowd behind you to feed off of. And the refs, like it or not, feed off of the home crowd to a certain extent and are kind of influenced by that, by the pace of play and kind of getting in that rhythm. So not going to have that at the SEC tournament. So, you know, Auburn's got to have guards that could shoot the ball. Depth is going to be an issue for them, but I could definitely see them winning their first two games there.
That would be awesome. We love Auburn basketball. They just don't ever give us a whole lot of reason to get excited. So, man, that would be great. All right.
Been a while.
Yeah, it has. Brandon, thank you so much for coming on with us. We really appreciate it. We like John said, we really enjoy your work, and it was very cool to be able to talk with you for a little while tonight.
Yeah, guys. Hey, anytime you guys ever want me on, I'm more than happy to kind of help out. I really appreciate it. And thanks, guys. And let me know the next time you guys are working on a book. Maybe I can write you a little review you can put on the back cover.
Oh, that would be awesome. Absolutely.
Thank you. Really appreciate that. Yeah.
Thanks so much, man. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right. See you.
All right, man. That was awesome. So we really appreciate, again, Brandon being on the show. John, is it question time in Parliament?
It is question. I'd like to thank Brandon again. That was awesome. I really appreciate him doing that. He has a lot of other things to do other than talk to us, and it was nice of him to take the time. So.
That's right. All right. Hold on. Tonight's episode has been brought to you by our current non-sponsor, Nestle's Nesquik. John, this week I am drinking on air banana strawberry.
Oh my gosh.
It's awesome. All right.
Jeez.
You're going to mail me a case of tea just to get me to quit drinking the Nesquik. I
have to send you some sweet tea.
All right. What's our questions look like this week?
All right. We got a lot of excellent questions from our listeners over the last few days. So I'm gonna start throwing them at you. You're going to rapid fire answer. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. One of my favorite questions this week comes from Aeutitude.
Yes.
Who says, is Nick Saban trying to ban the Eagles song Life in the Fast Lane?
it would be collateral damage.
And I don't want to be like that, the Alabama Stadium PA guy, but do we need to play that song when they come to Jordan-Hare 2 years from now?
That doesn't enter into the son of a preacher man take the money and run territory, no. Does it?
Or be like, I can't drive 55 or something.
Oh, yeah, I like it. No, I think that would work, yeah.
All right. Our next question comes from Emily Rios,
yeah.
Who asks, given a year to implement the system and off-season practice from Marshall, is the 2014 offense faster?
Well, they say apparently the entire institution of Auburn University football says that it's going to be faster. So, well, what do you think?
I think so. I think Gus really, with Marshall being a new quarterback who did not go through spring practice in 2013, I think especially the first half of the season, they were reluctant to run the hurry-up offense. But as the season went along, Marshall got more comfortable. They got, you know, better at running the plays and reading the signals and stuff. I think they went to it more. So I think this year, you know, Marshall will be much more comfortable from the get-go. And I think they're more likely to run it. I don't think they're going to run it the whole game, but it'd be the same kind of thing. There'll be points in the game where they just turn it on and go boom, 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 boom down the field. But
you know,
I would say yes.
You know, I think that there's two things, there's probably others, but there's two things that come to my mind immediately that Gus would like to do always. One is throw the ball more, and the other is go faster. And there simply have been times the last, you know, in last year and other times that he's been here that we couldn't do either one particularly well, and he adapts. But you know he's adapting grudgingly in some cases, and he'd like to go, you know, faster and throw it more. It's just a matter, and often I think, you know, Brandon was talking about how the team seems to get much better in the second half. I think that a fraction of that, I don't know if it's half or how much, but I think a fraction of the improvement is when Gus finally realizes he can't make the team do what he wants it to do. He's going to have to just manage what it can do. And of course, he is outstanding at that.
Right. But he's outstanding at recognizing here's the little things we do. This team does excellently, and we'll just put those together and make an offense out
but
of
it. But it takes him a while, A, to figure out what those things are, and B, to just kind of, I think, say, dang it, I'm not going to be able to throw it 70 times a game, and I'm not going to be able to go at ludicrous speed, you know. So that being the case, I'll do this, you know. So I really do feel like he wants to impose his will on how they play. It just takes him a few games to figure out which ways that'll work and which way it won't. So
that makes sense to me. All right, next question. We've got a couple questions from Jonathan Harris, who's at AU Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And his first comment is that he's waiting on the Fast and Furious jokes with Gus being fast and Nick and Bert Bielma being the Furious. So.
Oh, that's the – how has there not been a Photoshop poster of that?
I don't know. Who's Vin Diesel? I guess Gus could be Paul Walker and
– Yeah, and –
And Bielma could be the Rock.
Yes.
What to see we could do in that department.
Well, we have several listeners that are very good with the Photoshop. I'm very mediocre with it. I do the best I can, given...
Don't sell yourself short. Those Game of Thrones Photoshops are outstanding.
Okay? Well, I appreciate it. But, yeah, we have some... Auburn Elvis has done some good stuff. Oh, and I got to mention this, in fact. You know, coming up on the World Cup, I'm going to do my... Quadrennial, is that what you call it, every 4 years?
Sure.
Okay, it will be for tonight. I do my 30 days of the World Cup, where I do a different blog entry every day for the two fortnights of the World Cup, more or less. And one of them, I asked on Twitter last week if somebody could do the SEC as like Barclays Premiership soccer jersey logos, and Auburn Elvis sent me, y'all ain't going to believe it. He knocked it out of the park, to mix my sports metaphors. And so that's going up very early on in my 30 days as one of the features. In fact, I may spread those out over 3 or 4 days. It saves me a little work. Let him do it. So many thanks to Auburn Elvis for doing that. He's done, once again, does great graphic design work.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Our next question from Jonathan Harris is, who do we project to have a big game in A-Day, and do we think it'll be a big crowd?
Yeah, so who's the Damian Craig, Cameron Artis Payne at A-Day that, you know, is awesome, and then kind of we have to wait another year or so to see him really in action?
It could be Cameron Artis Payne again, couldn't it?
It could, yeah. Or it could be one of the new guys, right? Well, now, we won't have all the new guys. But
Dakia Williams, the wide receiver, will be there. I think it really could be him. They could come out throwing the ball a bunch, and he could have a huge game.
Yeah, particularly given like protecting the quarterback rules at A-Day and stuff like that, it could be even. Plus, they'll want to emphasize that. I mean, I think Brandon touched on that a little bit. They're going to do everything they can to increase Marshall's confidence, and so being able to hit Williams, that'll be, yeah, I agree. I think one of those two, and I hope Cameron Artis Payne does emerge. I mean, I think that would probably be our first choice, just because I guess this is his last year, and we know he has the potential. So I'm kind of crossing my fingers that he has a big season, not just for Auburn, but for himself. You know,
too. Sure.
So
our next question comes from Riss, RHYS, and he says, "What do you think happens with Robinson Therese? Does he stay at Stars? He moved to safety, moved to corner, and..."
Well, isn't the early word that he's going to stay at Star and
Garrett?
Garrett's going to move to linebacker or something?
Well, I think we'll have to see if Garrett's even close to the player he was, but Therese was excellent last year, and I don't see him moving positions. He worked at that position. His body type and his playing style is really perfect for Star. I think he's going to stay there, keep doing it, and do well. I mean, it could be that Garrett backs him up.
Well, yeah. I mean, but Justin Garrett is such a good player, such a good athlete. I mean, he was doing so well before that if he does come back anything like 100%, surely they can get him on the field somewhere. You just got to think.
Sure. And Garrett's Garrett, remember, was a linebacker before.
Mm-hmm.
And Therese was a corner and safety before. So it's possible that Garrett plays Star and Therese moves to safety.
Yeah.
So that's possible. Or it could be that they, you know, Garrett backs him up and they play a two-star kind of thing a lot. So, you still there?
I had a sneeze. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Next question. This comes from Bradley Blackman, who says, how much improvement should we see in the second year of Ellis Johnson's defense? And I think Brandon answered that, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, that was the question I saw and I passed on to him. And I think all he's right. pretty much right.
All right. A couple of people asked, what should we do with Barbie, the basketball team? You know, another sub-500 season, another tough year. What do we do there? Do you have any feelings about that?
Well, you know, I've kind of gone back and forth on it, but the last time I checked my level of enthusiasm, my sense was he did seem to be doing better this year. Honestly, I think that the main problem has not been his coaching so much as just attrition. You know, he's had like...
Is he causing attrition? Well, are players leaving to get away from him? Or
yeah, it's sort of the Gene Chizik football recruit question where you pull in all these, you know, five-star players or four-star players and they're not on the roster a year later. So, I know, but I mean, is it that he's... Well, here's the question, honestly. Let's just be honest for a second. Is it that the only players that Auburn is able to recruit to play basketball are questionable players? And then when he tries to be a disciplinarian and be strict with them, he ends up having to kick them off the team or they transfer away. In other words, is he too – I mean, you hate to say is he too much of a disciplinarian, because you don't want Auburn basketball to be out of control and giving in to problem players. But on the other hand, where do you go with that?
Well, then there's other things beyond his control too. I mean, because of Auburn has a contract with Under Armour and they're not Nike or Adidas, they're not – in with the big basketball camps.
Yeah.
And the big basketball camps route players through Nike and Adidas to Nike and Adidas schools. And because Auburn isn't one of those, we don't get school, you know, players from those camps.
Then there's the whole AAU.
Right. There's AAU teams, the high school teams, which Auburn, you know, got in trouble with in the past. And
we just don't even mess with them now.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And that's where the good players come from. So we can't have relationships with them, and we stay away from them. And then so that kind of hamstrings Barbie. So we have these two kind of things that are beyond Barbie's control, which result in Auburn not getting the best players. I think he'd get some players who clearly can play SEC basketball and play it well. The question is, can we keep enough of them for 4 years to build up enough? The other part is, and this is the thing that just kills you, is the SEC isn't that good. I mean, outside of Florida and Kentucky, the rest of the conference is pretty mediocre. And you see that, I mean, if Auburn was 10% better, we'd win a lot more games. You know what I'm saying? It's,
oh, yeah.
That stuff, even last year and this year, there were times when I thought, okay, well, maybe we're turning the corner here, you know? And then it would just, you know, the wheels would come off and we lose a couple of games we shouldn't, and that'd be it. And so, and then even then, you know, over the last couple of years, we'd play big teams, we'd have them on the ropes, so we just never could get the huge win, the killing stroke of like Florida this year. So I don't know. I think the players are playing hard. I think he's coaching hard. I don't think that he's lost a team or that kind of stuff. It's just, the other question is, can you get somebody better?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you.
Is there somebody out there that you can be like, okay, we get that guy, he's going to move the needle? Auburn's not getting Shaka Smart from VCU or the coach of Wichita State or whoever to come be the head coach at Auburn. It's not going to happen. So,
yeah. So do you run Barbie off or you keep him for another year?
It's hard to say keep him for another year, but I think I would. I mean, that's probably going to be unpopular, but.
That's kind of where I'm leaning too. For me, it's not like it's not
Chizik.
Like with Chizik. Yeah, with Chizik, I just felt like, one more minute, and I was just going to throw up, honestly. And I hate to say that, and people can, I mean, I just being honest, I just felt like the way things were going toward the end with just the behavior of the players, not even just losing games, but just the behavior, the behavioral issues, the legal issues, all that stuff going on. And to think that we were going to have to drag ourselves through all that for another year, and it probably wasn't going to get any better, and we all knew it, you know. So, you know, I've never been so relieved in my life in terms of sports and things like that as when they made that decision to go ahead and do that. And I don't feel that way about Barbie. I maybe it's just that I'm not as close to the basketball program as I am to the football program, but I just don't feel that.
I, And the other part is, I think with the football program, it was obvious to people like us that, that knew what was there, that they were playing way below their capacity.
Yeah.
In football, their results did not match the talent on the team. And in basketball, I think the results are pretty close to what the talent on the team is. So the other part is this, though. Like, I mean, it's clear that the attendance is down and the fans are not excited.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to make a change for change's sake just to get people excited again, get people to buy tickets, and because it's tough to get recruits to come when they see the empty arena.
That's true. That's true. No, that's true. So, all right. Any other questions?
No. I'm sorry. That was really it. The basketball ones were the end.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think we ought to go ahead and wrap things up then for tonight. We're in the off season now, so we have a little bit less going on to talk about. We have a few things coming up, you know, later on. I know that people are all going to be wanting to tune in for the big World Cup episode that I'm going to force on John, in addition to the 30 days feature. But we're going to do like previews by position coming up. We're going to do season preview, kind of game previews like we did last year. So we'll have stuff going on all the way, you know, we'll have A-Day, sort of post-A-Day, post-mortem. I discovered last week, John, and folks may have seen this on Twitter that listen to us, that my event in Montgomery is the same day as A-Day. So I will be with like an hour away from Auburn on A-Day and won't be able to be at A-Day.
That's frustrating.
Yeah, so I'll have I figure so all the people that would come to the thing in Montgomery to want to buy the Auburn book will be in Auburn instead of you know in Montgomery. But oh well, I'll still be coming down anyway. So, but yeah, we got a variety of shows coming up to get us into the summer and beyond. So it should be a lot of fun. Of course, we'll do our season preview and all that. So don't forget to, if you haven't already, pick up a copy of Decades of Dominance, and you can go back and get Season of Our Dreams to read about the 2010 season. And I guess the time is coming that we'll be starting to roll out new columns for the War Eagle Reader. We haven't done anything in print for them for a while, have we?
Nope, we got to get on the stick.
Get on the stick, yeah. All right. Any last thoughts before we wrap up?
No, I just, somebody said on Twitter, and it's, again, I'm ready for spring. Tired of this winter and up. I know you got the same situation where you are. I'm tired of the up and down. It was, beautiful here today, and it's going to be 40 on Thursday. So I don't know.
John, it was 81 here today, and it's going to snow tonight.
Outstanding.
Yes. So there you go. War Eagle. All right. Well, John, we're going to get on out of here, folks. We will see you all. Our time is up. As always, we thank you for yours. John, all I can say at this point is War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
I'm Batman.